I'm sorry, I'm of that age that whenever I hear the word convoy, I can't help but hear the song, Convoy. And you know what? There is a convoy of military vehicles rolling across our lands. What's this all about? It might not be what you think. These are historic vehicles from World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and other U.S. military conflicts. And they're restored and owned by members of the Military Vehicle Preservation Association. Guess what? They are on and they do this on a regular basis, a History in Motion convoy tour. They're following the Lewis and Clark Trail. They're in Montana this week. This is kind of fun. We'll talk about not only the history of these vehicles, the history of the wars behind them as well, but the men and the women who made history in them. That's today on Voices of Montana. So as we look at military vehicles, right, we go way back. And you know, the purpose of them has always been the same: to move people, move equipment, firepower, where and when you need it. But these vehicles have come a long ways from, you know, the Willie Jeeps of World War II. And that was huge. I mean, yeah, I think you start going back to World War II when really these military vehicles became essential to modern warfare. So they're like larger vehicles, like the Deuce and a Half. Now, honestly, I don't know about these, but the folks who do know about these, the M4 Sherman tank, during the Cold War, armies required vehicles that could operate a potential nuclear battlefield. So you have M38s, M151 Mutz. What are these vehicles? We're going to find out more. And guess what? Some of them are going to be rolling around the state of Montana. As a matter of fact, how come it didn't print in this? There's a new schedule out. I put it up on our Voices of Montana Facebook page. Let's get into talking about this and find out where they are. And join today. I'm very thankful to introduce Alan Johnson. He's a Military Vehicle Preservation Association member. And then Terry Shelswell, convoy commander for the Lewis and Clark 2026, or the LC-26, as they know it now. Alan, good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good, very good. It's great to be back in Montana.
I love it. You grew up in Lewistown, didn't you?
I'm a Lewistown native. I moved away to go into the Air Force in about 1983, 84. But, yeah, I have fond memories of Lewistown.
Yeah,
great place to grow up.
Yeah, it is. And thank you for your service as well. And the same to Terry Shelswell, convoy commander, and owner and restorer of a Korean-era M38A1 Jeep. How's that Jeep running, Terry?
It's running very well. Thank you, Tom and Cody, for allowing us to join you on this. So, well, yes, my 1952 M38A1 is the veteran of 10 of these convoys is running well here.
That's cool. How do you keep it running well? What was the and I'm curious about it. You know, just to start, there's a lot to talk about: the history in motion, your organization as well. But as you restored this, what did you say? Was it 1952?
What we did, and we've had this vehicle since 1997, and we did what a lot of the vehicle restorers, not only military trucks, would call a frame-off restoration. You take the body off, you take the axles off, everything right down to the bare frame, sandblast it, paint it, fix it, repair it, whatever you got to do, maybe rebuild the engine and all that, put it all back together again, and it's been a good, reliable vehicle for me from 2009 right up to without any issue to the end of this convoy and more to come.
Yeah, did you have to, you know, do you have all original parts as much as you can, or what percentage of parts could you not find and you had to kind of fix that?
No, actually, there's a huge market out there within our association and the vendors that we have, and they're either they're a mixture of new old stock. NOS is a term that's used, where they actually are maybe 1960s and 70s type of spare parts that were finally sold off when the vehicles went out of military service. And there's some reproduction where somebody says, well, we can't get this anymore, and they'll have it made locally or wherever, and so during the restoration or the year by year maintenance, if I need a if I need an ignition coil, I'm going to go to one of our vendors or several of them and say I'd like to buy a coil and it'll be shipped to us. So so that works out well for this kind of a vehicle. There are some vehicles where it's much more difficult to get parts just because there weren't so many of the vehicles built to start with, so parts are much more rare. So it some of those have to be fabricated, let's say, by the owners.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me as well, especially the different kinds of vehicles. And we'll talk about that as well. Alan Johnson also with us here. He's a member of the Military Vehicle Preservation Association. It is Facebook MVPA Convoy for more information as well. And then they've got their website to MVPA.org. Alan, tell us about the organization, and then tell us about the convoys, these history in motion convoys you guys go on.
So Terry would be a bigger expert on that. My history with the MVPA was I inherited the Jeep I drive today from my father in 2004, and I lived in Dayton, Ohio at the time. I was stationed at an Air Force base in Dayton, and the MVPA held a convention at Wright State University, the Nutter Center, I think around, 2007 or so. And I just stumbled on the group by accident at this convention and read about this 2009 Transcontinental, the Lincoln Highway convoy they had planned. And that really perked my interest. And so I rushed back to Montana where I had the Jeep stash and hauled it to Ohio and started trying to get it overhauled to join the group. But the MVPA to me, at least the windows I've had through the conferences, the conventions I've attended, is that it's really a bunch of people that have a common interest in military vehicles. And while we on our convoys kind of emphasize logistics vehicles, the soft skin stuff, the MVPA also includes people that are lucky enough to own armor, tanks, half tracks, those kinds of things, artillery. And so there's a weapons side to our group. And a fast, an interest there, but on our convoys we try and play that down. I guess don't want to scare the public so much. So.
I know, but don't you get those questions like, "Hey, does that thing still shoot?"
Yeah, most of the stuff I think that my friends, I have a friend Dave Areola, for example, that I knew near Dayton that has just an amazing collection, and he has a couple artillery pieces, and they've been demilled. I think that the barrels have been cut or drilled in a way that they can't handle the high explosive rounds that they were designed for, but he still shoots black powder charges from his gun, and it's a very impressive bang on a time like 4th of July. So yeah, I had great fun with Dave. So the MVPA spans the gamut of military vehicles. My little window into this world is that there's a bit of a struggle because it was easy. It was a lot of military vehicles transitioned into human hands after World War II and into the 1980s. But anymore, that accessibility seems to be getting harder and harder.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Some of the stuff that is coming out of Afghanistan, Iraq, for example, a lot of that was armored in a way that it seems to be the military seems to be more reluctant to let that stuff pass into civilian hands.
Yeah, I suppose the technology has changed. That's Alan Johnson again, U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, retired, and Terry Shelswell, convoy commander here. We'll talk about the route here in a little bit, and I know we have some other guests to work in, so that's really cool. I'm glad you guys are available. We'll talk about that schedule, and I know it's in Montana right now. You are actually going from Fort Mandan to Fort Clatsop, so North Dakota to Oregon on this trail. And so we'll get into that here, but Terry, tell me more about these vehicles. Tell me more about how people respond to them as well as you are history in motion.
Tom, I'll give you a perfect example. While Alan was speaking, I had had my phone on mute, and a gentleman came up here and he tapped the World War II vehicle that's a nice little Jeep that is sitting here in front of me, and he said, "I drove these when I was in service."
Yeah.
And with a smile on his face, and that's a typical wonderful reaction that that we'll have from many of our veterans. And we've had times when some of our veterans will come up and they'll look at the front of a 5-ton or a deuce and a half and say to us, "I never saw the front end of one of these trucks. I was always in the back and going from point A to point B." So there's a little bit of humor there. And there have been times when we've traveled, and Tom, we've been referred to as the longest 4th of July parade in the country.
Nice.
With us traveling through the small towns of our great country, we're rarely on an interstate. And it's many times it's me planning these, and the only time I have to get on an interstate is if there's no other way to get from A to B. And so we'll be going through towns, and we'll have sometimes our veterans standing up and saluting us as we drive past, and people are waving flags, and it's absolutely awesome, and it's humbling, and in some cases it'll make you give a tear to your eye when we see a veteran saluting us.
Yeah, and it. You know, despite what some groups want us to believe, this country has still a great patriotic spirit and a great appreciation for our military members who have served. And going back to 1942, you know, there are members in our neighborhood, so to speak, in our, well, let's just call them tribe, that have fought in that war. So it's not that far removed, is it, Terry?
No, it is not. The numbers are, as we all know, are fewer and fewer with each week, and we're sad for that loss. But when we have a chance to see our veterans, whether it's World War II or was coming out of Iraqi Freedom or coming back from a tour a month ago, We are there to say thank you for your service and how can we help you?
Hey, Alan, is there anything that flies in this convoy?
Is there anything what?
That flies in this convoy?
No, I think it's possible a couple of us might have some drones for some aerial footage, but no, we don't have any. No aviation guys in our group.
Yeah, and those are vehicles that are really, really hard to come by, too. Yeah.
Yeah, there are MVP people that are there are pilots with restored aircraft that they're not in our with us today.
Yeah. Terry, yeah.
We've had the great fortune to have had on different parts of different convoys to have had Vietnam era Hueys flying overhead with us to escort us for some time. I remember in Texas, when we were in Alaska. We had a military aircraft, vintage aircraft, flying escort with us for some time. So we've had these opportunities, which are just something that not everybody on your city block gets to have.
Yeah, and the fact that you guys, though, this history in motion, this is not the only convoy. I've seen on your website, Alaska trips, other trips. So we'll kind of get into that, too. But this one is rolling through Montana at this moment. So I want to get that schedule out. Well, the convoy is underway here. It's a military vehicle convoy, a historic military vehicle convoy. And we just barely got into some of the names there, Deuce and a Half and the Hueys and the Willys and we'll get into more of that as well. This convoy, again, and they do this, it's the History in Motion program. Welcome back to Voices of Montana. Fun stuff to talk about today. Members of the Military Vehicle Preservation Association have launched this convoy. They're following the Lewis and Clark Trail. So they're starting in Fort Mandan, North Dakota. They'll end up in Fort Clatsop, Oregon. And right now rolling through Montana. So they were in Glasgow yesterday and today, for that matter, hit Wolf Point. Let me get the schedule, and then I'll have these guys talk about it as well. So today, a bit of a rest day in the Glasgow area. Then the route goes through Brockway, Montana, to Jordan, Montana on day 5. That's July 30th. It will hit Grass Range and Lewistown on July 31st, this Friday, and then in Montana as well to Great Falls on August 1st. The 2nd, they'll be in Helena and Three Forks. So they have lunch stops and overnight stops as well. And then they get another break around Three Forks. They'll go fishing, I'm sure, and then head off to Salmon, Idaho. Alan Johnson is with us. Alan, thank you. He's a member of the Montana, the Military Vehicle Preservation Association. And then Terry Shelswell, a convoy commander as well. And then we're going to welcome a new guest here. And thank you guys for coming along. I want to get everybody in as we can. Rick Eads is with us, sort of the planner, historian. Rick, Alan called you the mastermind behind these things. As I said, I think that kind of scared him and it might scare the rest of us. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on board, too. Let's talk about planning. Let's talk about, I kind of just hit those stops in Montana. Why don't we go into what this convoy really looks like on the ground?
So the convoy on the ground, we're about between 40 and 50 historic military vehicles, you know, from the early 40s to the 90s, essentially. Yeah. And we travel a designated route. We followed the 1805 Lewis and Clark Trail to the west as close as we can. We don't have boats. We don't have horses. So, we do what we can. But the route is very well planned out. Every day we have a rest stop at, say, 30, 40 miles. And then we might have another rest stop before lunch. And we have a lunch stop, afternoon stop, and then overnight. And we've been, this year, the MVPA has done a really great job of reaching out on social media and other places help public awareness of what we're doing. You know, we're supporting veterans. We're celebrating the 250th anniversary of our nation and our love of these old military rigs. I mean, it's pretty fun. So 21 days. Essentially 2,100 miles at 35 miles an hour.
How do you get the vehicles back then? It's point A to point B and then back to point A again.
So some people drive. Yeah. Some people hire an auto transport. And like for me, I only drive 2 hours to get home. So it's not too bad from the end. However, I did have to rent a U-Haul and a trailer to get out to Bismarck for the kickoff. So, it's definitely a love to do this.
Yeah, it sounds fun. And the convoys have got to be something else as well. I'm going to ask Terry Shelswell, as convoy commander, how do you keep it all together? I suppose sort of in a military fashion.
Absolutely, Tom. As Rick has mentioned, we started planning this, and typically for a convoy, it takes about two years to get it fully laid out and planned. And we have these stops each day programmed. We know when we're starting in the morning, and we have a pretty good ETA of each of our stops. We have a prescribed amount of time we're at each stop. And that allows us to not have folks wondering where we are in the afternoon when we said we're going to be somewhere at 2:30. Make sure that we're there, and so we do that. We also, as we mentioned, we have the route quite well laid out. We have driving instructions handed out to every team member for each day's activity, so that if someone does happen to get misplaced, they can make their way to the next stop. We have an organized way that we or structure that we have for the convoy with a certain order of the vehicles and very much like the military does. We use their approach, and we've been complimented by more than one base commander on our execution of these convoys. So I'm very proud of our teams for that. We identify months in advance the potential lodging locations at each of our overnight stops, hotels, camping, and give those out to our team. We have tech inspection of each of the vehicles as when they join the convoy to make sure they have key things like wheel chocks and make sure all the lights are working and whatnot. So we uh, We do a lot of preparation. We have a published SOP, standard operating procedure, for these convoys, and we follow it rather strictly to ensure safety for our convoyers and the public that are around us.
And I suppose it goes faster than you can imagine. I mean, 21 days, 2,100 miles. There was a question on Facebook. Can you guys follow them on Facebook if you like? Fun stuff that they're posting every day, and it's all about Montana at this moment, too. The Military Vehicle Preservation Association, MVPA Historic Convoys is where you'll find it on Facebook. So I'm looking at a comment from Rick Eads, the guy we're still talking with here. Rick, you say in this Facebook post, can't wait, M38 or GPW? That's the question. What did you decide?
I got the M38. It's tried and true. GPW, I just finished restoration on an not too long ago, so I decided to leave it home. So M38,
what's
the way I went, 1951.
What's an M38? What's a GPW?
So M38 is a Korean War era flat fender Jeep, and the GPW is a World War II Jeep, but it was produced by Ford. Willys makes the MB, Ford made the GPW.
Understood. So why did you go with the M38?
It's I've had it on another convoy before, and I just know that both of them I think are reliable, but I've driven this one quite a ways in the past. So I felt that it was reliable and it is a little more comfortable actually to drive.
Oh, so right. you're kind of sacrificing comfort at times, when you get into a 1950 vehicle too. I got like a minute and a half here. Talk about your restoration of these vehicles. What was that process?
Oh, boy. Well, the 1951, I think it came from Fort Lewis, Washington, and it was a couple-year restoration. I always wanted a World War II Jeep as well, so that one I went over to Devil's Tower, Wyoming, and picked it up, and it was a three-year restoration there on that, and it's just, they're really a labor of love. We love these old rigs. We want to preserve them as well as possible. And, some people want to just put them in a museum, but we actually want to drive them. So we want them mechanically sound so they're not going to break down, And I think everybody here is a pretty decent mechanic that, if little issues arise, we're able to overcome. And there's some folks that are master mechanics that are along here in the convoy that are certainly willing to help. We help each other. It's a really tight-knit group of folks here.
Yeah. How many miles do you know? Does it have an odometer even? The M38?
Well, this one says 52,781, but I bought that one on eBay, so I have no clue how many miles this has on it. It's probably similar in mileage.
Going to have more miles, but maybe no more wars for it. We've got a military vehicle convoy rolling across Montana, but don't sweat this one. This is historic military vehicles from the Military Vehicle Preservation Association. Members are on this convoy. They call it the LC-26, Lewis and Clark 2026 convoy. They're following that route from North Dakota through Oregon, or to Oregon, in honor of the 250th anniversary of our country, and also as part of their History in Motion program as well. I want to point you, and I'll get some these stops out here again as well, but for more information, mvpa.org. A lot of guests, they're all right now in the Glasgow area. They've got a rest day, and then they head off to Brockway, Montana for a lunch stop tomorrow. Jordan, Montana, they'll be there overnight. And the 31st on Friday, Grass Range, Montana for lunch, Lewistown, Montana for the evening. A lot of guests here with us. Alan Johnson, who reaches out and spokesperson for the MVPA. We also have Terry Shellswell. He's the convoy commander. Spoke with Rick Eads a little while ago. And Terry's still with us, and Alan as well. They're all in a group. And thank you guys for doing all this. But let's welcome Richard Galley now. He's a Montana resident. As a matter of fact, had taught school in Montana for a number of years. And as I pulled something up and now kind of put it away and can't find it, Richard, I think it was History Teacher of the Year many years ago as you were teaching at the Bridger program in Bozeman. How are you, Richard?
Fine. Couldn't be better. I'm in Montana. When I went through the border into Montana, I had a surge of happiness. You know how that goes.
I do. I do know.
Yeah.
And thank you for both your service, retired 20 years, Montana Army National Guard, as well as being in Iraq for a lot of years, and then taught at Bozeman High School's Bridger program. And again, that's a
yes.
Preserve America History Teacher of the Year to get that correct. I found that. So congratulations, yep. and thank you for that. Tell us about, I'm going to say your baby, maybe you guys, but tell us about your vehicle, and then tell us about how important it is that, you know, we have this History in Motion program, especially from your perspective as an educator.
Yes. Well, I have a 1945 GPW. It's made by Ford. I always tell people at the car shows it was made on May 6, 1945. I know it was made in May, but you know who was born on May 6th? It was Chuck Norris. And, you know what happened the next day, May 7th? It was Germany surrendered. Coincidence? I don't think so.
I
know it was made in early May. But Ford had six factories making Jeeps. They also made B-24s, 8,000 of them. So, you know, that was contribution of Henry Ford to the war effort. Didn't take a cent in profit, which is neat. I love my Jeep. It's a lot of fun. My wife likes it. My boys like it. My dogs like it. We go camping in it sometimes. But this group of people here is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I made so many friends in just a few days, and common interest, but also just diversity of people from like California to Maine to Florida, you know.
Give us that perspective, Richard, then about the people that you're associating with, because one of the things that I thought about here is we talk about the vehicles. It's not really the vehicles. It's the men and women who made history in them.
Yes. Yes. And, in World War II, you know, we had like, I think close to 700,000 Jeeps. I like to say Enzo Ferrari said the greatest American sports car ever made was the Jeep. And a little fun thing there. But, you know, they last. They run forever. Like I said, I keep mine in top shape. They're easy to repair. They really are, until something really breaks in them. But there's a club in Bozeman. But it's all over the state, actually. Montana Military Vehicle Club as well.
So what we talk about the difference between military vehicles from like World War II to today's vehicles, right? The command systems, satellite communications. I mean,
maybe not.
You might have a cigarette lighter, but that's about it for electronics, I think. Huh?
I don't even have one. I do for my stove. But the you know, when I was in Iraq, we had satellite uplinks. People in Washington could see where we were going, you know, and patrols. We still had to kick doors in, though, so that's fat. So they were doing that in World War II also. My Jeep is set up as the 187th Airborne Infantry from Korea. And I love that car shows. These men from Korea come up to me and they go, you know, everybody's forgotten about my war, and thank you for honoring the Korean vets. And I'll say the last thing about that is one time there's a guy that had done both jumps in Korea, and I talked to him for like 3.5 hours. It's just, you know, he knew he was airborne, so we talked and talked and told me about, yeah.
Yeah, and you're a paratrooper yourself, aren't you? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Once a paratrooper, always a paratrooper.
Yeah, right.
So Aaron Flint's a paratrooper, too.
Yeah, yeah. And you're from Bozeman, so you've run into him a few times, so pretty cool. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm originally from Great Falls, okay?
That's okay.
I don't want to claim Bozeman too much, if you know what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
It's just gotten too pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still a wonderful place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's Montana. Yeah. Tell me about teaching in school. Tell me about, recognized for your, you know, approach there, Preserve America History Teacher of the Year Award a few years ago, yeah. But... you know, how important is it? Are these kids today or students, do they have a hunger to learn more about our country? Are they paying attention to kind of some of the turmoil going on? And does that want them go ahead.
Yes. I mean, we studied the industrial age, and a friend of mine brought a Model T over, and I bring my Jeep over, and somebody bring like a 2011 brand new Dodge. And, you know, we look at how things have changed. Bozeman's got a computer museum. We did the same thing. I remember one girl saying, "Mr. Gale, you really like this stuff, don't you?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "We do too." So that was one of the best quotes I've heard in my life.
Yes.
And they gave, you know, the alternative high school were the feral students. And they go, "What does feral mean?" I said, "It's the opposite of domesticated." And they all like that. They were the wild bunch. But they were also the poets and musicians. And a lot of kids went in the Army. 150 of my homeroom kids went. 120 in the Marine Corps. I don't know where I went wrong. But I love them. I love them all. I told my students I love you 1% less than my own kids. And, you know, some would roll their eyes. And some kids would go, "You know what, Mr. Guy, nobody said they love me ever." Yeah. So
yeah.
Good for that. You know,
yeah.
It's just connect with the kids. And I shared my experiences. You know, I've lived in Europe and South America and Iraq. You know, I could tell them if the rockets are coming in, they go, "Zzz, bang." And if they're going out, they go, "Bang, zzz."
Oh.
You can tell if they're coming in or out.
Well, that's great that you can, that they wanted to share in your experiences there too.
Yeah.
And thank you, Richard. I'm going to run out of time. I want to get Dan Seaborg on here for a few minutes as well, and then we'll wrap up with Terry and Alan too.
Okay.
Again, Richard, thank you for both your service in the public school system and in the military. Appreciate you, sir.
Yes, and wonderful talking to you too. This is a real pleasure and a real honor. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Let's see. Okay. Dan Seaborg, cowboy poet.
Okay. You know who Dan Seaborg is?
Yeah. Hi.
Hey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Free text on this. The first time I ever met, first time we were ever on a convoy was the Alaskan Highway, an AC-12 in 2012. And Terry, our commander, sitting next to me, came up to me and introduced himself. And he knew the name of our horses, our dogs, my wife, and he knew everything. And we had a great chat. And before he left, I said, Terry, if we're sitting around the campfire, I'm a cowboy poet and I'd love to recite something. Well, I saw the deer in the headlight looks from Terry. I mean, he couldn't get out of, he left that camp like a rocket. It was like I said, I have 50 years of home movies. I'm coming to your house. I mean, he wanted no part of this. And, so I don't call it cowboy poetry very often anymore. I call it cowboy stories. And, I have one that, shows some of the humor of our outfit, and it also throws some things that actually happened in the convoy, and I'd like to recite this to you.
Please share it. Thank you. This Dan Seaborg again.
This poem, I took Pat Richardson, who is passed away, but one of his poems, and I intersected some of the important things for our convoy, and here we go. Convoy Joe went a-driving, took along some extra fuel. To ever run out will just never do. The CO began to worry. Gosh, it's never taken this long. And after 3 days, he figured, by gulp. So he calls Peggy, the local sheriff, for his voice crisp and short. "I've got this missing conveyor I'm needing to report." "Well, describe him," the sheriff says. "You know, height, weight, age." "Well, I haven't weighed him lately, and it's kind of hard to gauge. But he's 5'2" standing and taller laying down. His eyes are red and runny, and what teeth he's got are brown. Always gnawing on tobacco that stains his lower lip. Can't keep his pants up, and they're always half unzipped. He ain't much on bathing. He wears this gamey scent. You don't need dogs to track him. You can sniff which way he went. He's driving a big green truck and needs a lot of luck. He smells like gear oil and looks like and looking for a coil for that doggone truck. "What color's his hair?" the sheriff asked. The CO thought about it and said, "Shoot, he's bald." And on second thought, just disregard this call.
Tom, as Dan said, he and I met in 2012 up in Alaska, and we have been great friends ever since. Sometimes we don't see each other for a couple years, but it's like we hadn't seen each other for a half a day, and we were back just chatting like it was yesterday.
That's great. Was his original story true, Terry, about I'm a cowboy poet? Well, I'm sorry, I think my mom's calling.
Yeah, it's not far off, because I had never been around a poet to start with, and then a cowboy poet, and I wondered, what the heck am I getting myself into? And that fear was dispelled very, very quickly, and now I would be personally offended if Dan didn't give us a poem when we're at a stop.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I count him as a good friend.
Oh, I'm so happy. And people can tell, I think, in listening to this, that there's so much camaraderie there and so much appreciation for our country and for everybody else and the efforts and the volunteer efforts that you guys put into. Only time for some final thoughts. Alan Johnson, thank you for being a part of this and being a spokesperson and getting a hold of us. And then Terry Shelswell. Terry, give us one final thought. I got about a minute and 10 seconds left.
Good. Thank you very much, Tom, for your team and allowing us to be a part of your show today. I want to make a final comment as a shout out to the wonderful people at White Shield, North Dakota. It's First Nations Reservation, and they completely outdid themselves on how well they treated us there and how nice of a stop it was. We thoroughly have enjoyed so far our trip through your great state of Montana and look forward to continuing on the convoy here over the next days. Thank you.
Beautiful. Alan, you've got 30 seconds to share something with us.
I feel like our convoy is a rolling bubble of happiness. You know, there's a lot of division in the country right now, people finding reasons to find fault with each other. And these convoys, it's a rolling parade. And I don't care how old you are, how young you are, what color you are, your gender. Everybody seems to find some happiness in watching us go by, and it's very grateful.
That's
very
really grateful. Good. Thank you. And please, from all of us here, and I can just say for the whole state, too, I think, thank our veterans who come up and say, hey, I sat right next to this one, and there's a lot in war that goes on, but the people are precious. Alan Johnson, Terry Shelswell, thank you very much. Richard and all of the guests. Oh, I'm running out of time here. Thank you, guys. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.